Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Wyoming Through New Eyes. My name is Carol Ann, and now I know a lot more than I did in episode one. So welcome back.
Hello, my name is Taylor. I'm your co-host for this podcast. I am the Raised in Wyoming component of this shindig, and I've had a really good time discussing these places with you, Carol Ann.
This is our last episode, so we're a little bit sad. I'm a little bit sad. I don't know if Taylor has a mental bet going about if I cry or not, but odds are looking pretty strong because these have been so much fun to be chatting about all of the road trips that we've done. To take the road trips in general have been fun, but then just to record them, like, go back over them. It's just so fun. But if you were with us last time, we discussed our day trip to Saratoga Hot Springs. And if you're joining us for the first time, I highly suggest you start at the beginning, at the introduction episode. That way, if you don't want spoilers about anything, or if you don't want to know our inside jokes until they actually happen, go back to the beginning. But if you're here just to hear our conclusion, that's great too. We're happy to have you. Please feel free and visit our website to check out the previous episodes, information about Taylor and me, to see pictures of our most recent trips, actually all of our trips. Our website is going to be tkandcwuwcapstone.wordpress.com. Yeah. Wow, we're here. We made it.
Today, like we said, is our very last episode, so it's going to be structured a little bit differently. Carol Ann and I are going to go essentially over our favorite things from our last four episodes of adventures. And so we're going to count down each of our top three favorites. The problem with that was that we figured out that our number one favorite is the same. So essentially, we're going to count down our numbers two and three and then do number one together. And of course, we're going to throw in some memories and some stories, but it wouldn't be one of our podcasts at this point without a final episode or segment of Carol Ann's Queries.
Okay, this has made me a lot sadder than I thought it would be, but I decided for my questions to think about Wyoming as a whole, because we've been all across the state at this point. And so I guess my biggest question is, what is the furthest place to drive to in Wyoming from where are we currently sitting in Robertson Co. Library in Laramie, Wyoming?
For this one, I'll be honest. I was just going to puzzle this out in my head because I thought that'd be a little bit more fun. I did look at a map, but I think the furthest place you can drive to is going to be a little town or a stop in Yellowstone. The furthest place I could find on a map that has a name is Mammoth, Wyoming, where the Mammoth Hot Springs are, which is in Yellowstone National Park and has some really cool terrace geothermal hot spring water stuff going on, and a resident elk herd as well for you ungulate nerds. Maybe I'm the only ungulate nerd.
I didn't know what an ungulate was before I met you. So.
Things with hooves.
Hooves. It would behoove you to learn about ungulates. I'm funny. Anyway, also a side note, I think we should come up with a bingo card for all of the hot springs in Wyoming, because we've already visited two. So.
Do we get a prize when we get a bingo?
I mean, the prize is the adventure itself.
Oh.
Yeah. Anyway. Next question, why does Wyoming have so many cows and sheep, and which do you like better?
So my immediate and, like, pretty simple answer to this question is that we're a super agriculture-based state, but there's actually some really fun stuff in here, too. According to census data and the Department of Ag data compiled by a website called Vox, there are, like, 1.3 million cows in Wyoming and only 500,000 people. In comparison. So yeah, lots of agriculture going on, lots of ranching in this state, and you see that reflected when you drive places and you see lots of cattle. You see it at the university where there's lots of folks studying agriculture. Anywhere you go, like, Wyoming is super agriculture-based. Quick story time, though. Freshman year, anytime we went anywhere with Carol Ann, she would comment out the window that she was seeing more cows at once than she had ever seen before all at one time, and it was just those numbers of cattle are so normal to me, and I'm not a cattle expert or a sheep expert, and I don't want to claim to be. I'm actually terrible and the worst person. You don't want to invite me to be at a branding or a docking. No one invite me. But I also remember you asking us how they make sure, like, the cows aren't pregnant all the time, if they're just, like, in a pasture somewhere, because you just didn't know that, like, they kind of separate them out and prevent that in various ways. And that's not a bad question to ask, given that you were raised in Colorado Springs and you didn't have any experience with cows. But that was something I just had never, like, thought about having to ask. And I think that's just a really great highlight of how different our upbringings were and how different our perspectives are when we come places in Wyoming. And on the topic of sheep, I will say this. There are lots of them. And I enjoy lambs, but sheep are not my favorite, particularly when I'm hiking and I see sheep tracks and I'm super excited because I think that I'm going to run into bighorn sheep and it ends up being domestic sheep.
Oh, that's a disappointment.
There's nothing technically wrong with them. I just personally prefer cattle.
I would love to see bighorn sheep. And if I showed up with a normal sheep, I would be sad about that too. Fair enough. Okay. This question has been on my mind for the past 4 years. For context, on my first day of school, I was living with a wonderful girl named Kaylee. She's still friends with us today, and she introduced me and Taylor. But the question that got me confused was, Taylor's from Hewlett, northeast corner.
About as far as you can go.
Kaylee's from Lander, which is not close to Hewlett.
Like, very much central lower Wyoming.
And they knew each other. And I had no freaking clue how they knew each other. And we figured out it was, like, a long story, and now they're, like, friends still. And it's wonderful, and we still talk to Kaylee all the time. But how the heck does everyone come to know everyone in the state of Wyoming? Everyone knows everyone. It drives me nuts.
So as you can tell, this is something that just kind of amazes Carolyn. And, like, I do know a lot of people, particularly on campus, in some way or another, whether that's a family or a student that we write notes to in our campus visitor center or we give tours to, or someone running for Associated Students of the University Senate, or someone just going through the union or running into me at Walmart. I think it really is just kind of the culture of Wyoming that you make friends everywhere you go. And then there's a couple other nuances there for me. Like, I was not the most sociable high school kid, but I know all these people, right? The UW recruiters like to say that Wyoming is one small town with really long roads, and I think that's a pretty good way to think of how Wyoming works. So I went to this really small school, and so I ended up on every team and every club. So I did volleyball and basketball and FBLA and student council and band and choir and whatever led me to an opportunity to meet people from other places. And I think that's a really cool thing that I got to do as part of our school. So I think Wyoming is very close-knit in general. I also think that I benefited, and, you know, I get to see those benefits that I was really given by virtue of the public schools in Wyoming when I know all of these people, have all these connections, because the schools in Wyoming do a really good job of connecting across the state, whether that's the state leadership conference or the all-state marching band, all of that. I actually met Carolyn's former roommate, Kaylee, right before we were going to be in high school in the all-state marching band, and then we stayed in touch because of state student council. So Carolyn thinks I know lots of people. I probably know no one in comparison to some of the other people in the state. And I think also maybe my perspective is a little bit different and she only sees mine. I think the state as a whole, though, works to stay really connected. The schools, the university, the businesses, the alumni network, and then, like, we've got all these spread out families. And I think Wyoming's a friendly place, and people want to make those connections with others. They want to make friends. But I do promise, not everyone knows everyone.
That makes me feel, I guess, a little bit better, but, like, it still ticks me off. Like, everyone knows everyone. Like, okay, for example, I met a girl in one of my classes, and she's a wonderful person, and I love her to death, and she's amazing. And then I happen to mention one of the guys in our friend group, and she's like, oh, this guy, I know exactly who he is. Like, wait, how do you know him? She's like, oh, we lived across the street from each other. Like, that's not fair. I don't understand it. I knew one person when I came to college, and I never see him on campus, which, anyway.
But another quick fun story. Carol Ann's boss, during one of her internships during her time here, my father grew up near him and refers to him to this day as uncle. And we had no idea.
Yeah, that was
until I met Carol Ann's boss, and he was like, wait, I know your family.
Like, yeah, that was a really weird moment for me, that this, like, very lovable person, don't get me wrong, but he was kind of scary because he knows everyone as well. But he is very well versed in the press community. He just knew Taylor. Like, he knew Taylor's family, and Taylor's family's in ag and science and education, which is super cool, but not related to the press. And I did not understand. Like, everyone knows everyone. And it's weird that all of these circles that I'm like, yeah, have you heard of this person? Taylor's like, oh, yeah, I was in second grade with this person. I'm like, I don't understand. Anyway.
So if nothing else, there's a plug for you guys to come to the University of Wyoming and take advantage of your time here, because you can just get to know so many people from so many walks of life. And a lot of that is what the Honors College is about anyway, is seeing everything from different perspectives and realizing, like, how different we all are, and that that's a good thing.
Yeah, and maybe if you come to Wyoming, then you'll meet a friend who will adopt you for Easter, and you can go dye eggs with shaving cream and take really obscenely long road trips listening to music through someone's speaker instead of the car stereo, because someone's car stereo didn't work.
Yes.
AKA, I'm talking about Taylor's car. Yay, Penny.
So we've decided that we'd sort of like to recap the favorite places that we went to. And as we talked, like I said, it was clear we had the same number one favorite. So we're going to save that for last. And Carol Ann and I are now going to go through our next two favorite places. So Carol Ann, what two places were your numbers 2 and 3?
All right. My number 3 place has to be Lollipops. And number 2 was actually the Wind River Canyon.
So for those of you following along, you guys already know a lot of these places, but in case you need a reminder or this is your first time tuning in, Lollipops was the ice cream place we visited in Saratoga during episode 4, and Wind River Canyon goes all the way back to episode number 1, the one right after our introduction. So what made Lollipops one of your top 3?
Do I really need to explain that ice cream is delicious? Like,
no, but it wasn't just the ice cream.
No, okay, I'll give you that. It wasn't just the ice cream. I loved the 50s malt shop vibes. Like, there was a jukebox, there was the cute sundae glasses, they had some super fun pictures on the wall, and the lady who owned the store was super nice. Like, she asked us how we were doing, and when we kind of let slip that I hadn't been to Saratoga before, she got all excited, which was super fun. The ice cream itself was absolutely delicious. The red velvet ice cream, 10 out of 10, and honestly I think it was love at first bite. Super cheesy, I know, but it's true. It was so good. I've had very few ice creams that top the Lollipops ice cream. I could have eaten an entire bowl if I went to, but I didn't want a food coma afterwards, and we promised we'd share it with the boys who came with us. So you're welcome, Michael. I shared my ice cream with you.
Ha! All right. And what stood out to you so much about Wind River Canyon? I have to admit that that's one of my favorite drives in the state, but for you, what made it so memorable?
I think the thing that made it so memorable for me was before we entered the canyon, it was a lot of like openness, which I don't mind driving through open places. I think it's cool to see all the rolling hills, but just to go from open grass and occasional pronghorns to a reservoir and then into like this canyon that's full of tunnels that are carved into like mountains, and you drive through these little holes in the middle of rock so you can keep going. Like, that was the coolest thing for me. And I loved the windingness of the road, and I loved the seeing the different layers of the rocks, which I have no idea what really any of them mean, but it was still cool to just be kind of be in awe at like nature. And the river was really pretty. I actually, after that trip, we did some Googling, and I would be okay going fishing with the right company, but I would prefer to go whitewater rafting, and they have some cool raft programs. I also really loved our side stop during the trip. We just kind of had been driving for a while, and we needed to stretch our legs and just eat some food. And so we pulled over onto the shoulder, and Taylor got so excited about seeing a rabbit brush. And I don't know what a rabbit brush is, but
it was a really tall rabbit brush. It was almost as tall as me. That's insane.
Yeah, so we saw that, which was cool. I was a little bit confused at the time, but now I understand that rabbit brush is cool, I guess. Anyway, she took a picture with a rabbit brush, and I needed to do a jumping photo because I believe that photos are a lot more fun if you have more fun taking them. So explained a lot of the awkward photos of me on the website. I will preface that right now. Should have done that in episode 1 about me making weird faces or weird poses. It's just easier to take photos when you're laughing at them. Anyway, that was one of my favorite things, was the Wind River Canyon Drive.
I've seen a lot of people kayaking and like rafting down that river. I think you have to go at the right time of year, but I think it'd be super fun.
Wouldn't it? I would be willing to make a trip with some friends just for the sake of rafting down that river, especially because it's such a pretty river. Okay, Taylor's turn. What about you? Well, it is your turn to give us the two places that give us your top 3. So drum roll.
All right.
So honestly, my favorites go back to the hometown episode that we did where we talked about Devil's Tower and Hewlett. Getting to share those places, particularly the town of Hewlett where I grew up with you and with our other friends, was really special. And I've been away long enough now that I can really appreciate the place and the people and the culture. And my other favorite was the Legend Rock Petroglyphs, which goes back to our Thermopolis episode. That's Lander, Sinx Canyon, Thermopolis, and the Wind River Canyon as well.
Sick. I really like the Legend Rock Petroglyphs too. They have that super fun map, which was the flyer that Taylor was talking about. If anyone is keeping track, all of the places that we've talked about doesn't just span in one specific episode. It covers actually quite a few of them. And in addition, later I mentioned the sand dunes, the Kilpecker sand dunes. Spoilers, sorry. But if you are interested, all four of the episodes are covered in this conclusion. So I highly, highly, highly encourage, if you have not done so, to go back and listen to them. And if you have done them, I would not be opposed if you go back and re-listen to them, because we're just fun people to listen to. At least I'd hope so. If you're on this part of the episode, we're on our conclusion. You must like us at this point. Anyway, back to Taylor and back to why these two places stuck out for you.
Yeah, so for Hewlett, sort of exactly what I've pointed out, it was really special to revisit the place that I grew up in and see the perspective of my friends and get to show you around places that meant a lot to me before we ever knew each other. It was also really cool for you guys to see like where I went to school, to see the football field, all of that jazz. If you guys don't remember, we watched a six-man football game while we was there. Yeah. And Carolina had so much fun.
It was fun. I liked it.
It's so different and it's so small town. And I really think that six-man is a more entertaining form of football than normal football.
I think it's just different because you're not in the bleachers. We sat on a blanket about a yard from the actual sidelines. Like,
can't do that in a lot of places.
No, you can't. It was just fun to watch. It was just entertaining.
And then for the Legend Rock Petroglyphs, this was one of the places on our list that I felt was like really important to go to, but I had never physically been to before. I thought the whole experience was really well structured for visitors, in particular the little map that they give you with the information and the list of petroglyphs to look for. And the site itself was really, really fascinating, from learning what the Dinwiddie tradition was to thinking back on those carvings being like 10,000 years old. It's one of those places that has just really humbled me, and I'm going to remember that feeling forever.
Well, that makes me so happy. I really liked that place too. That was fun. I don't know. It's hard to pick a favorite. But that brings us through each of our top two of three places we visited. So we've got Lollipops and Wind River Canyon for me, as well as Hewlett and Legend Rock Petroglyphs for Taylor. So that brings us to our number one, which we tied. I hope you are wondering what it is and you're balancing on the edge of your seats with anticipation, because it's a good one. So what, without any further ado, what was our absolute favorite place from this podcast?
We didn't have any debate. We both ended up naming Sinx Canyon as our favorite place, being our favorite trip. It's kind of funny that this ended up being the most memorable part of this podcast, since it was our first official trip, don't you think?
I know. It's so sentimental. Like, it was our first road trip, and we had been thinking about doing this podcast for a while, actually, when we first realized we had to do a capstone project, and I realized I didn't really want to write a paper. We started talking about this, and then Sinx Canyon was kind of our first big, wow, we're actually doing this moment, which was really cool. I loved spending it with you and your family and driving in your massive truck, but my favorite part was the fish, the feeding the fish. Like, mm-hmm. There's a coin slot machine, if you remember from our first episode, that you put in quarters and it gives you a bunch of pellets and you throw them off a bridge into the Fat Fish Lake, which was cool.
The Fat Fish Lake, also known as the Rise.
Yeah, that too. But Fat Fish Lake sounds cooler, don't you think? Alliteration. Yes. I think one of it was my favorite places, just because it was the fall. We went in September for a family wedding for one of Taylor's family friends. And the leaves, I am a sucker for gold leaves. And Sinx Canyon had some of the best leaves I've ever seen. The trees were gorgeous. The rocks were gorgeous. There was cool animals. The fish were fun. I think it was just super fun.
I spent a lot of time in the Sinx as a kid, and every time I go, it's just as fun as it was the time before. Feeding the fish is always something I think is really fun and really interesting, because it's nothing that I've ever really like been able to do anywhere else, because in general, feeding wildlife is a big no-no, right? And these fish are like very unique because you can't fish there. And so they've decided it's okay. And so it's something and an experience that you don't really get in a lot of places.
And I always just feel really small when I get to stand in the sand down by the hole in the wall at the sinks when the water is low. I think it's just super cool to look up at the rocks and how the water has kind of shaped them. And it was on the whole a really good weekend. And the plants and the trees were beautiful, the crisp fall feeling in the air. It was great. It was so great.
It was just fun. I really enjoyed it, like I said. I keep telling my parents, and hi, Mom and Dad, shout out, hello. If they wanted to visit anywhere on any of the trips from this podcast, or if they just wanted to see something a little bit more off the maps in Wyoming, Sinks Canyon would be the place I recommend. This is where I would be happy to, if I just needed a day off and I just needed to drive somewhere, I would get in the car by myself and go to Sinks Canyon because it was just that cool. Of course, going with friends is much more entertaining. So naturally, I'd force Taylor to come along with me. But it's definitely something I would do. I would enjoy reading books about it, seeing a movie. At Hollywood, please come out to Wyoming and film something at Sinks Canyon because it's really, really pretty.
It's a really beautiful place, and it's picturesque. The way to put it. It's so good.
And it's not too far out of my comfort zone. Like, the Legend Rock petroglyphs were wonderful, but the drive out there put me a little bit on the edge of my seat. And these ones, there's a paved road, and it's just stunning. I can't even describe it, guys. You'd
it's
have
so
to go.
It's so fascinating geologically. Like, yeah. You don't even have to be nerdy in the science way that I'm nerdy to kind of nerd out about Sinks Canyon.
Yep, you just have to go see it yourself.
Mm-hmm. So that sort of concludes our countdown of our top favorite places and a bit of a look back on the episodes we've done during this project. But we still wanted to go over a few different things, maybe with like a little bit of a spin on it. So first of all, Caroline, I want to ask you, what is the most interesting thing that you think you learned over the course of this project?
Oh, gosh, that's a hard question. There's so many interesting things I've learned. To start, let's just recap that before this podcast, I had been only to the Chick-fil-A in Cheyenne and Douglas High School and Taylor's house.
And you flew into Douglas High School.
No, we drove out there.
Oh, you did?
I was asleep for the entire drive, though, so okay. I don't really count it.
So you slept through the whole drive to Douglas High School.
Yeah, I did. It's fine. It was still entertaining. But over this podcast, one of the most interesting things I learned were actually about the Kilpecker Sand Dunes, which was on our Rock Springs trip right next to Boar's Tusk. And the thing that I learned about it is that sand dunes move. I knew glaciers moved, but I didn't realize that sand dunes moved. So I thought that was super cool that people like go out to the sand dunes and they like occasionally move over the year. And then the flowers that you learned about, they're called?
Endangered flowers?
Beard tongue. That's what they're called. I've been trying to come up with the name for the entire day, and it had to do with like nose hair or like ear something. And I'm like, it has
something
to do
bodily.
Something bodily in a form of hair. Beard tongue. That's what it was. But those flowers were super cool too.
That's
so
fantastic. It is a beard tongue or a penstemon if you don't want to think about it in bodily terms.
Well, I mean, penstemon sounds like a $5 spelling word.
Fair
beard
enough.
Tongue is much more entertaining.
I'm just so glad you remembered something from the Curiosity Corner because I was so excited about that section.
Of course I'd remember it. How dare you doubt me? They're so interesting. I just sit there for 3 minutes staring at you, wondering how you get so much excitement out of flowers. It's just so cool. But what do you think? What did you learn? Most interesting thing?
I thought really hard about this, and I think it's a little bit abstract, but I learned a lot about how places sort of advertise themselves. Like, these are all, like, places that you can go to as a tourist. And so what works in that advertising and what doesn't work. So, for example, I really appreciated, like I said, the way the Legend Rock petroglyphs had that flyer for us to grab. It was really well made. It gave us some history and some background, helped us experience the site in a deeper way. And at the same time, when they do that, they also like very respectfully tell you, like, don't do this, but this is okay. And so, like, I think that's really well done because that also needs to be advertised. I'm also taking some classes in scientific communication right now. And so this was a really good example of scientific communication and a good sort of representation of that Legend Rock site, sort of like a lot of the stuff that Carol Ann makes in her classes.
Yeah, my lovely flyers that I feel like have no impact on society. Looks like I'm learning something. Super exciting. Okay, what was the most surprising thing you learned?
It's a very simple fact, and I didn't even have to think about this, but I was so surprised about the fact from episode 3 that we don't actually know if Theodore Roosevelt specifically visited Devil's Tower before he ever made it the first national monument. That surprised me so much. What about you?
Oh gosh. Okay. Well, mine's not as cool as Teddy Roosevelt. I'll give you that. I'm still processing that you can taxidermy a fish. And I looked up the verb. I think it's taxidermize? Question mark. I don't know. If you can verb form taxidermy a fish, I understand how you can stuff a bear and a deer. I get that. But it just does not compute in my head. And the only thing I can think of is the singing bass on the walls that sings, like, don't worry, be happy. That's the only thing I can picture of a taxidermy fish. Or, like, art forms where people sculpt it out of clay. But I can't actually picture a taxidermied fish.
I think some of it's kind of similar, especially when they do, like, the fiberglass ones. But, yeah, that's fair. I also learned that. I had forgotten that already. Bigger question. Given this podcast, given our capstone project, given the whole thing, what would you do differently if we did this all again from the beginning?
Oh, that's a terrible question. Okay, it's not a terrible question. It's just a hard one to answer. I don't really think I'd change anything, to be perfectly honest. I've had a blast doing all of this. I think the bigger things I would change is, one, I would love to pack a cooler and do picnics instead of stopping at fast food joints, which, don't get me wrong, love the French fries, love the muffins. But I think we were missing that element of just sitting in nature, which was kind of cool. And in our defense, it did get cold at different points, so sitting outside wasn't always an option. But
I always liked when we got to eat in, like, local places along the way, and we did get to do that some, but sometimes it just wasn't an option time-wise.
Yeah. The other big thing I would love if we had done a couple more places. Part of this is logistics. We are college students, and it is a lot of effort, as we recently discovered, to build a podcast. So if we had just had more time, if we had more funding, if we had more places to go, and it didn't take long periods of time to drive places, if we just had a teleportation machine to get us to where we needed to go, I think that would be the big changes. So future scientists out there, if you have a teleportation machine, please lend it to us so we can come visit new places in Wyoming and we can do a season two. Ha!
Yes. Honestly, I think some of that is relates to what I was thinking. I just wish we had started this earlier. We had this idea like sophomore year and we were like, oh yeah, we'll do this senior year. And I wish we had just started it then and gone to way more places. I love where we did get to go. And I just think that there's so much potential on this topic to do more. And I learned so much in this process about scientific communication, about writing things like project proposals. And I just wish that I had had a lot of that knowledge earlier.
Yeah. I love this project. This has been so fun. And one of our long-term goals with this project was not only to sort of compare our perspectives in these places, but also to see what our different disciplines do. So I'm a communications major. Taylor is involved in wildlife, biology, and fisheries management. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, guys, it's a record. First time in 4 years I have gotten Taylor's major right.
I guess technically it's wildlife and fisheries biology, not wildlife, biology, and fisheries. But
dang it,
it's very close.
Dang
and also,
it
depends on where you go. Sometimes it's game and fish. Sometimes it's fish and game. Sometimes it's fish and wildlife. So
I was so close. I got my hopes up. Never mind. Point is, I got to see a little bit of Taylor's life, and Taylor got to see a little bit of my life, which is what we'd hoped to do with the Honors College, especially with this project.
Yeah. We work so hard in the Honors College to try to look at things outside of ourselves and the things we study from different perspectives. And a huge goal for us in this podcast was to do that in these trips as a way to sort of force us to do it in everyday life as well. So I guess I want to ask, what did you learn, and what do you feel like you learned about my discipline, like sciences, particularly wildlife and conservation based?
I learned this is a lot of work. Yeah, it's a lot of work. Like, there's no other way to put it. It's just a lot. There's so many different things that the wildlife field studies. Like, we've talked about mountain lions. We talked about moose. We've talked about flowers and birds and rabbit brush and sage grouse and, like, all of these different things that I've been in conversations with you for the past couple of years. There's so much of it. And I think, personally, I think one of the coolest things I've learned is about, like, the Lazarus species, like the beard tongue or the black-footed ferret.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Those things are cool when, like, a species looks extinct, but they're actually not, and they come back to life, like Lazarus, right? I also didn't realize just how many ethical standards there were. All of the research we've done and all of the different things that Taylor's told me about, very interesting stuff, but you have to think about humane treatment of nature and animals. And I understood this was a concept. I'm not saying that wildlife people just play around with deer or anything, but it's so tedious and trivial to make sure that everyone's doing everything properly. And then the last thing I didn't realize how much science was involved. That sounds really dumb when I say
it. Like a different kind of science,
it's like chemistry
almost.
And microbiology. And like when you go to a zoo, you don't immediately think of the effects that chemicals have on frogs, right? You look at the frog and you're like, wow, that's a cool frog. It's just so different. And I didn't realize that how much was involved in wildlife sciences and how much thought process goes into just studying one thing. It's also very outdoorsy, which makes a lot of sense. I don't know. I'm just kind of in awe. And I knew I respected your field in the first place just because we need people to study wildlife. But I have a new level of respect towards professionals in this field because it's just so impressive how much work goes into studying finite things like deer migration. Like that's one specific thing in your field. And there's so much work and so many amazing people go into it. And that's just so cool to me. So, yeah. Thank you for listening.
No, I really appreciate that. And it's really exciting to hear that from you. And I know your discipline's also a lot of work. I've watched you for the last 4 years work your tail off all the time in your different internships. Guys, this girl essentially had 3 jobs one semester between her internships and giving tours in the union. Like, she also works really hard. And it's going to pay off really well in the future, I have no doubt.
But I think more and more I'm realizing over the course of this project that like our homework assignments over our college careers were really different, but our disciplines intersect constantly in every place we visited and in almost every facet of the research that we had to do for this. And I'm learning a lot about scientific communication. I've already said that. And I think a lot of scientific communication itself is combining the things that Carolyn and I have studied and all of the literature we've consumed, all of the flyers and posters and wooden signs. That's all scientific communication. And so these things, communication, wildlife biology, conservation biology, all of those things, they have to go hand in hand, even if we don't always think about them like that. I learned through research a lot about effective marketing and such of like tourism places. And Carolyn's comments about it really bring to me like an idea of what these places are and aren't doing effectively. And I experienced a lot of just awe at how much you know. I did learn yesterday in class the difference between serif and sans serif fonts. And Carolyn had been talking about that like last week, and I had no idea what she meant. And now it makes so much sense. So that's a really silly example, but it happened all of the time. And I think that the experience that I had just like elucidated that for me better than I'll ever be able to put into words here or anywhere else.
Yeah, that was a really funny conversation, honestly. For context, also, Brady, Taylor's fiance, didn't know about them either. And so it was very kind of, I don't know, I felt good about myself when I'm like, yeah, I've studied sans serifs and serifs and different fonts and what fonts mean and colors and advertising. I felt very good about myself. It was very, I'm grinning ear to ear. You can't see it, but I'm very excited.
No, it was a cool moment.
Yeah, it's just.
And my professor was so excited when I told her that this connected to my real life. And she's like, that's all I want. Like,
yeah. It's just fun. We've had these moments throughout not only this project, but throughout like our entire friendship of like things that just connect in life, like, why? I'm like, wow, wildlife, cool. And something will like appeal and I'll understand something more and it like sparks a new interest versus when Taylor hears something from my field that's like, whoa, that's super cool. For example, I'm taking class right now and we're studying horror movies. I get to talk with Taylor about horror movies.
There's just so much more intersection and we have more in common than you would ever be able to see from like a resume that we have or a summary of our lives.
And I think that's part of the cool thing about the Honors College and about being students here is that I would not have met Taylor if I was surrounded by journalism communication students. Don't get me wrong, I'm sure there are lovely journalism communication students out there, but they wouldn't be able to give me the perspectives that Taylor has given me through this podcast, through her mud snail adventures, just all of it.
And we ultimately wouldn't have met if we weren't both in the Honors College. And maybe we would have met in the Honors College if we weren't also on the Honors floor, but it would have been in a very different setting. And we lived a floor away from each other, both in this Honors community. And I can't be grateful enough to the Honors College for providing me with the friends that I've made as a result of that experience.
Okay, this is getting too mushy for me. I'm going to get sad because we graduate in like a month and a half and I'm not ready to acknowledge that. So we're going to move on. But with that, that is the end of the episode. But before we get to the sad part of saying goodbye, we're going to stop by the Curiosity Corner. If you're new to our podcast, this is where I set a timer for 3 minutes and Taylor gets to talk about anything she wants. Are you ready?
Oh, man.
Last one. Here we go.
Alrighty. So this Curiosity Corner is also essentially going to be our last academic piece, and there's a little bit of a seriousness associated. Last episode, we talked just a tad about the salamanders that are going to be migrating soon in Laramie, which was super fun, and I'm going to talk some more about migration today. I care extremely deeply about migrating animals, so do a lot of people, and we're still learning a lot about migrating animals, which is really cool. So migration in itself is a behavior in animals where they essentially have two ranges, often like a summer or winter range. And the idea is that animals migrate between those different ranges at an ideal time that will give them some sort of advantage over staying still and in the same place. So if there's better food access or the winter isn't as harsh in one place, that kind of thing. And that's a pretty abbreviated way to put it anyway. And I'm not trying to encapsulate the whole of what migration is, because that's something we're still exploring. We're like, we all know that geese go south for winter, right? That's a pretty well-known example. Almost every one of the trips we took over the course of this podcast takes us over and through wildlife migration in Wyoming. In particular, I-80, which runs right through Laramie, disrupts a lot of migration. And this Curiosity Corner is 100% not a criticism of I-80. It's just a really important road in Wyoming. We all drive on it, you know. I drive across and through I-80 when I go to my wildlife jobs. But I'd like to highlight that pronghorn, mule deer, and elk all have to figure out how to migrate over and around I-80. And some of them don't figure it out and they get hit, which is, you know, dangerous for the animal as well as the people. It's expensive. It's this really multifaceted problem. So I'd love to bring some attention to some really cool folks that are all collaborating to help us here with this problem, because Wyoming and the public, we really care about these big game animals, and not just when we're hunting, but all the time, including when we're hunting. The Wyoming Cooperative Fish and Wildlife Unit, the Migration Initiative, the Wildlife Crossing Initiative, all of these things are going to be linked in the show notes, as always. And these are these amazing research groups and like advocacy groups that are getting stuff done that informs us about migration, researches migration, helps us raise awareness, helps us, you know, figure out what we should do. One of the really cool things Wyoming has and is sort of doing to mitigate the issue of these migratory barriers like roads are under and overpasses for wildlife crossings. And they kind of use fencing to like force the animals to choose to use those under or overpasses so that they can't be hit by vehicles. And there's aspects of users of I-80 as well. So it's useful when you see the sign, you slow down a little bit because you're like, hey, there might be elk in this area. Or, you know, you drive a little bit slower because it's night and you know that you need that reaction time. I don't have a specific paper to mention for this section. There are going to link lots of papers, though. This is ongoing academic research at the university, how we can sort of continue to exist with these wildlife, which is super cool. The people that I've mentioned, as in like the groups and research, like these folks are doing a ton of incredible research. And so I'm going to link a lot of information about it. But yeah, wildlife are super cool. Migration are super cool. Migratory barriers are not super cool, but we're currently working on just finding ways that we can continue to exist in the same environment as the wildlife without maybe being as destructive to them.
That was great. Right on time.
I was super excited because like this is something that affects all of Wyoming and this is our wrap-up episode. So I was super excited, and I personally am very into deer. So
no, I
it was very
that.
Exciting for me.
I always get really scared when I drive on I-80 and I see like deer pronghorn sitting off. I'm like, I know you're going to cross right in front of my car and it's going to be dangerous for both of us. You're either going to die or I'm going to get like hurt, and a car is just going to be the collateral and all of this. But I feel like it's a really important issue that no one really calls attention to.
And I don't know if you've ever seen one of the over or underpasses, but they're really cool looking.
I saw a picture of one in like a foreign country. I don't remember which foreign country. One of the ones near Europe or Asia or something, where it was all green and lush and it's like just a bridge. Like it's a land bridge. It's super fun.
There are a handful of them over where I work in the summer, and it just makes me really happy when I see them, because it really reduces kind of that very like dangerous, expensive collision that we have a decent amount. And that's one of those human wildlife conflicts that we do have at least a few ways to kind of mitigate.
For sure. No, that was great.
Thank you.
But that does bring us to the very end of not just this episode, but this podcast. And I'm very sad, but it's okay. We're going to continue to do what we do. I'm going to continue trying to learn how to advertise and market and talk to people and survive horror movies. And Taylor's going to continue to make a difference in the world of ungulates. But I've had such a good time doing these trips and learning new things. We have laughed so much about random things, like our band, the Funky Little Amphibians.
We're going to name our band the Funky Little Amphibians.
Yes, yeah, it's a fictional band. Please don't look up that band name.
You'll be disappointed.
Yes, you're not going to find pictures of Taylor. You'll probably find, like, I don't even know what you're going to find. Just whatever. But I've also learned about the skill set of driving on dirt roads. I'll get better at it one day, potentially. But we're so, 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 so glad. That was a lot of so's, but it's just to emphasize that we are very, very glad that you are able to tag along with these journeys with us and listen to our experiences and the knowledge that we have able to learn through this project.
And we're really grateful for everyone that has committed to listening to these podcasts. We loved it so much and we hope you enjoyed it at least a little bit as much, but we also have a lot of people to thank for helping us through this project. And this is not by any means an extensive list, but the University of Wyoming, the Honors College at the University of Wyoming, Dean Peter Perelin, Jocelyn Cassidy, our advisor, Maggie Bourquet. There are so many people that deserve our thanks. And we're sending you the most heartfelt thank you for helping making this possible. I promise.
Seriously. Thank you so much for Studio Co. within the Co-Library for providing all the equipment and all the technical help. So right now, they're going to see a lot more of me as the editing process begins. But they've been amazing in helping us set up the podcast booth and teaching us how to use the equipment. So thank you for that entire process and support. Thank you as listeners for everything you've done for us. You've given us such a wonderful, wonderful avenue. We knew we wanted to do a project, but we didn't realize how much fun this project would be. And that's partially because we wanted to share our experiences to listeners like you. So thank you very much. If you'd like to re-listen to any of our episodes or look at pictures of our adventures, of Taylor standing next to a rabbit brush, of me holding fishing equipment, anything like that, please visit our website, which is tkandcwuwcapstone.wordpress.com. Once again, I'd like to say a big personal thank you. So, yeah.
Wow, I'm crying.
It's okay. We hope that you enjoyed hearing about our road trips and learned something new, because I know that Caroline and I both learned a lot in this process. And I'm just really glad that I had the opportunity to finish this capstone and start this project with my best friend. And with that, for the final time, we are signing off. And this was Wyoming Through New Eyes.